Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the Radio Show. Hell No, the Radio Show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. We give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. Go ahead and write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on our discussion-stirring topics on tonight's episode. The telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. When you're prompted, dial option number 1. The number again is 718-508-9419. Hell No, it was a one-hour show, and we take calls in the order we receive them, so please sit tight. We want to remind everybody that we can receive an email at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com, and y'all can find our episodes on demand anytime on our Facebook page and on Twitter. Partial support for Hell No, the Radio Show, comes from our loyal and loving sponsors, and Terry's going to tell us about them now.
Our primary sponsor this week is our longtime friend and massage therapist and body worker extraordinaire, Ms. Jane Flint. She works out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She's located at 10350 West Oklahoma Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. If you're within 100 miles, it's worth the traveling. I'm telling you, it is an amazing event having a pro like her work on you. If you have issues with past injuries or things you just want feeling a bit better or just a good relaxation massage, Ms. Flint is as good as they get. So, listen up, everybody. If you mention our show, she will give you $10 off your first appointment. That's a nice deal. And after you get done with the massage, you're going to realize that that was a steal deal, not just a regular one. She is truly amazing. She is at the top of her game. She is schooled in more than 15 different types of massage and bodywork, including several of the techniques that they use on the Olympic athletes that are rarely available for private individuals. And one of them is the activated stretching work that they do on the Olympic athletes. She's one of only two people certified in the state of Wisconsin to do that work. So 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue, located just off the freeway. The phone number is 414. Excuse me. Nick, take over for me for a second here.
I don't know the number, but I can tell you that going to get a massage is one of the best things. And I've gone back and forth about problems in my neck, and the chiropractor says he's fixing it, but I don't know. Last time I went to go to the massage place, they did a great job. You got that number yet, Terry?
I've got it. Excuse me.
Hope Terry doesn't have pneumonia. Pneumonia can be a real bitch.
We'll pull this together in a couple of minutes, but take it from here for a moment, Nick. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to run down, as Terry looks for that number, I'm going to run down some of our topics for tonight.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay,
I'm sorry about
back.
That, folks. 414-321. Oh, man. Excuse me. 9030.
I told you. So one more time, clearly.
414-321-9030. I'm terribly sorry, folks.
What did I tell you about kissing Hillary Clinton, Terry?
Oh, my God.
Getting pneumonia.
That would keep me up for weeks afterward. I mean, you'd have to try to decide, did you want to kiss Donald Trump or did you want to kiss Hillary Clinton? You'd have to think about that one. Excuse me.
Donald Trump, he does like to kiss. You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but some of his speeches, when he has the mothers of their unfortunate, their children died in sanctuary cities, he kissed every one of those mothers. He likes to kiss.
Well, good for him. I hope this does not plague me for the rest. I'm going to take a sip of tea here, so try to get me through the night. One last time for people who didn't get it, 414-321-9030 for Miss Jane Flint, massage therapist extraordinaire, and tell her we sent you. It will be one of the best decisions you ever made, going in there and getting work done. Let me tell you, I so badly need a massage right now, I can practically taste it. So, quick sip of tea here, and we'll travel onward. Where are we at here, Nick?
All right. Well, we are in the middle of September, and we just passed 9/11. And I'm always happy to say when another 9/11 year goes and we don't have some sort of awful attack. I've noticed this year there were less programs on TV about it. I mean, it was really, you know, but still, a lot of people I've talked to really kind of hold that date as a, you know, one of memorial, not out there celebrating and having parties and whatnot. You know, it's interesting. Some of the programs that I saw were you're talking about the children of lost people in 9/11, especially mm-hmm. some of the first responders. And you know, those kids are 15 years older now, and some of them tell their stories and really nice tributes.
Just to interrupt your math, I hope they're not 15 years older.
Why is that? It's 15 years. The kids, not the people who died.
Oh. What? That's a little indefinite reference here.
What kind of... Oh, okay. I don't know what kind of tea.
A little indefinite reference. Anyhow.
Kind of tea Tara has there, but... why don't you tell us about our passing personages? Mr. Fred Hellerman, the founder of the Weavers, recently passed away. At age, she was 89 years old.
Yeah,
I don't remember 89. The Weavers that well, though.
The Weavers did some what we now call Americana-type music.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very well-known, very well-respected, did a lot of TV work. And in the era of the coffee houses and hootenannies, the Weavers carried into that era from the 40s and 50s. The Weavers... were known for wonderful harmonies, very American lyrics, middle class appeal, and did some really great stuff. I mean, the Weavers, you knew you were going to get quality when you got them. They were as good in person, if not better, than they were on recordings. So we wish him the very best as to wherever he's harmonizing. And folks, if you've never listened to the Weavers, go and look up some of their music. They did some great stuff. Great stuff. So, onward and upward. We have a whole host of things that we're going to talk about tonight. One of them has to do with tools. We're going to talk about pliers this week on our semi-regular segment on hand tools. And we're also going to talk about the poles. Things are getting closer and things are heating up. And, of course, we have our two candidates. Wish we had more. By the way, Nick, what's your thought about the Libertarian candidate? Where do you sit with him?
You know, I don't know too much about him. As far as the election, I haven't really looked. I know his name is Gary Johnson. That's about all I know about him. I haven't looked into him too much. I don't really know much about him. All I know is that right now a vote for an independent is going to upset a lot of people in either party because it's so close in a lot of states.
Well, one of the things I found interesting, and you know that I have something of a libertarian bent to me, and he's running as a libertarian candidate. He didn't sound all that libertarian to me, number one. And number two is I don't think he's an identifiable candidate. There's nothing about him that really stands out, that jumps out at you and says, I can beat these other guys. He's, of course, using the springboard of hey, nobody likes either one of those two. How about me? That's all well and good if you've got lots of charisma and chutzpah to go with it, but he's just way too white bread for me. And I really don't think he is truly a libertarian candidate. I mean, many of his views are just simply not libertarian at all. And those of you who don't know about the Libertarian Party or the libertarian views or dogma, you really should look it up so you understand that we could potentially have a third party in this country, which we desperately need. It would be so nice to see enough strength. But the libertarians tend to appeal to a relatively narrow group. They tend to be people of higher intellect. They tend to be people who stubbornly resist being manipulated. And they tend to be people who feel that we should have personal freedoms, that we aren't puppets of the government with our strings getting pulled every day. Nick, what's your view?
Well, the libertarians are closer to conservatives, and they are also into, you know, spending decreases and cutting spending, and they're for a smaller government. They're also a little bit leave me alone. They're not into a bigger military, and I don't know. For me personally, I'm a fiscal and military conservative in those. I mean, take all the social things issues aside. You know, I do like the libertarians that they're kind of hands off with a lot of that stuff. A lot of the social issues. If we could eliminate social issues from politics, not something that I think is ever going to happen in my lifetime. But if you could, and just go down to, you know, numbers and what makes logical sense, I think they're a good choice for many people. You know, the way the climate is, it wouldn't be my choice, but you know, I think that if they were stronger on military spending, they might have more. They might get further. I mean, I think it's good that there's another party to look at for a lot of people. I think there's a lot of choices that people have to make, and I think that the parties that we have right now, again, it's almost, you know, what more issues can we add to our platforms to have people, you know, for and against? I mean, we might as well, you know, throw up there that Republicans are dog people and Democrats are cat people and add that to the platform, you know, more divisive.
Hey, I like, you know, that. Issues, I kind of like that.
right now, you know, as far the thing is, Gary, this Gary Johnson guy, unless he gets 15%, he's not going to be on the stage in the debates anyhow. So,
yeah.
It's kind of a moot thing. I think what's more interesting, though, aside from him, are the two other individuals that are out. There's actually three out there right now, and the other two have, you know, significantly less. In numbers, and you know, they're, you know, a lot of the Hillary people will tell you that the one lady is votes away from her. I can't think of her name right now. my fall allergies prevent me from accessing certain files. It's like having a bunch of pollen like jammed in all the file cabinets in your head. It's a blast. But one other thing about the polls before we move on from politics, because I'm sure, wait a minute, we're all signing up for PTSD treatment. You know, and I hope I wouldn't have, you know, and people joke about the VA, the jokes right now, you know, Hillary Clinton claims that now she has pneumonia. I hope she should go to the VA is kind of the joke. But I do like Mr. Trump's plan that he announced in the pre-debate forum when he talked about, you know, you're a military person who is suicidal. You need help. Whatever your reason that you need help, and, you know, go to private hospital and find out ways of private and other hospitals, go get the help you need. And they figure the bit, I mean, if he can make that happen, it's good. Last thing I want to say about politics, interesting website for anybody who hasn't looked at it, realclearpolitics.com. Again, realclearpolitics.com. And under there, there's a thing for polls and the latest polls, and it's kind of a misnomer sometimes to say Real Clear Politics. When you look at all these different polls, they have them listed here for September 14th, And there are, I'm just looking at this list, looks like, you know, there's like 50 plus. I mean, polls everywhere, any poll you can imagine is on this site. So they have the spread on the right-hand column, and it says, you know, Clinton's up 2, Trump's up 5, she's up, he's up, and you kind of look at where some of the majorities are, and you can also see the type of publications and who's putting these out. You know, some of these liberal colleges on the East Coast, you know, they're like way – Massachusetts, some WBUR has Clinton up 26. You know, so, I mean, it's kind of all over the place, but real clear politics. You can get all the polls, and it should be interesting to see what happens in those polls after the two major news stories affecting the Clinton campaign right now are, of course, the comments about the basket of deplorables and then also her falling and collapsing at the 9/11 memorial on 9/11, and then 45 minutes later popping out of her apartment, and she's got pneumonia, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
what
out
about
there.
Kazimierz Pulaski? He was a good poll.
He has his own day. You know, they celebrate Kazimierz Pulaski Day in certain places. That's a pretty exciting poll. There's a lot of polls out there that are for athletic purposes, and ladies dance on them and get in great shape, right?
Yep. And they're fun to watch.
Speaking of pole dancing, let's say hi to one of our callers. She's probably going to have my head. I'm not a pole dancer, but if you were, you'd be in good shape. Your number ends in 6838. What's going on? What do you think about poles and the poles?
Poles and the poles.
Hello,
dancing
how
poles.
Are you doing? Yeah, I have a pole
good.
In the pasture. I use it regularly. You know, I ride the tractor and then I jump on the pole. I have this specific act. That was
sounds
a joke.
Very rural. Sounds extremely rural.
You wouldn't believe the people that come to see that.
I might. At the end of the night, she counts the number of teeth, and the guy who has the most wins a small prize of a Hershey bar that is only partially eaten.
and how much gas they stole out of the tractor?
I think three teeth was maximum, wasn't it, on that?
Yeah, three teeth is maximum.
What
I have to say really is, in terms of polls, yes, they are all over the place. Going back to candidacy options, personal opinion is we have two candidates. And if you want to make a statement that you're conscious, I understand that. Please do. But it's also, in my opinion, a wasted vote.
Okay. I guess she told us.
You asked, I guess.
No. I'm just kidding. That's the point that is so hard to deal with. You know, what do you
it's
do?
It's true, though.
What do you do? It is true, and it's true, and it's true, and it's true. And
I mean, look what happened with Ross Perot.
Yeah, but Ross Perot got absolutely poleaxed by the establishment. I mean, they just went out. Ross Perot had something going for him, and they made sure they stopped him because he was dangerous for them.
I'm not being negative about Ross Perot. I'm looking at the president. I mean, what happened with the election?
I understand. Believe me.
Yeah. Okay.
He had everything stolen from him, and you know, in spite of the private power that he had when it came to dealing with the two biggies, they crunched him. Absolutely crunched him. And that's why I don't see a strong third party ever having a chance of coming out. You know, if Hillary drops over tomorrow and has a whatever she might have and becomes incapable of running, it's one of those, I'm sure there's plenty of tap dancing going on right now, wondering what they'll do if she becomes too infirm to be able to run for president. Who do you
is
throw
there,
in the ring then?
Maybe Joe Biden would do a burnout in his Camaro in front of the White House and announce he was throwing his hat in the ring.
Oh, man.
Is there a precedent for what happens in a situation like this?
That would be a mixed question. I don't know.
From what I've seen, and the question's been asked, you know, what if a candidate is not able to carry forward, they can cancel the election or they could suspend or postpone it. Why they would suspend or postpone it, I think they might just, they could cancel the election, but, you know, but there's those other candidates, like now you're a libertarian guy, all of a sudden, you know, may have a horse in the race. Maybe a bunch of people like jump over to him, you know, so you can't deny him the election. I think it would just carry on as it would be, but I guess there's also a cutoff where the DNC, if Hillary was removed or wasn't able, the DNC could put somebody in that, but there's got to be a cutoff, and I'm just thinking from a practical purpose, at some point they got to print ballots, so they need to know whose name's going to be on there, so there's a cutoff at some point, but I believe that the nominating committee of 145 people are the ones who could put up a replacement. And it could be any person who's eligible to be the president, 45 years and older, and, you know, naturalized U.S.-born citizen and all that.
You know, I've always wondered. Hey, take a number. I've always wondered if, you know, every once in a while, I've always wondered what would happen if somebody, hey, lady, shut up, I'm talking.
Oh, my goodness. What kind of tea are you drinking again?
Yeah.
Happy tea for Terry.
I'm taking the politician approach.
Oh, okay.
At any rate.
You're asking for money now?
I've often wondered if I was extremely wealthy and had the ability to pull something off, a great stunt would be to see how many votes you could get for Alfred E. Newman. And I'll bet you if we had enough people in this country with a sense of humor and a brain, you might even get them elected or at least get them in the running. I've voted for Alfred many a time. So.
All right.
Where are you when we need you?
My concern would be if Hillary doesn't run, that it would have catastrophic results at this particular point in time.
Catastrophic in what way?
In what way? Yeah.
Because do we have enough time to truly understand another individual's position? We as a country really don't know what the precedent is in terms of a situation like this.
Help her with those big words, will you, Nick? That takes up too much radio time here.
Is he not being awful? I tell you.
I'm telling you. I know. I don't know what in his coffee. But, no, I appreciate the idea, though, that if you put someone on last minute, unless it was someone vetted, it could have drastic future long-term consequences for that party. You know, when we circle back to the idea of a third party or, you know, the Libertarian Party, the problem is the financial backing. People don't realize how much these parties have and how much work goes into that. And, I mean, they just don't have the oomph really to get a lot done. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. These current polls that are out there don't reflect this last weekend. You know, and a lot of people are kind of moving in other directions. It's interesting. One of the things that I've experienced when I've been registering people to vote as a neutral voter registrar is that there's a lot of people who are finding out that the polls out there are not reflective of all of those newly registered voters or people who ain't voted in the last few elections, because the people who get called and polled in the polls, that information comes from the Secretary of State's office from different states. So unless you're a recent voter, you're not even in that pool. So the people who are dormant or people who have been, you know, sitting out or are new registered voters are are registering in force. But and the last thing I've got to say about it, some interesting things when we listen to politics, trying to remember what some of these talking heads are saying half the time, there's very interesting different tones in words. We like talking about words on this show. We've talked a lot about, you know, the words that describe
polls,
things very accurately.
Polls,
like poles, hammers,
and pools,
you know, flyers we're
pools
talking
and
about.
Poles who are in pools. And
so there's a never say list and an instead say list. So you're never supposed to. So this is something I got today. So when talking to voters, instead of talking about privatization, talk about personalization. So where you talk about, instead of saying people should have private accounts, you say personal accounts. Instead of tax reform, they say tax simplification. Instead of undocumented worker, it's illegal immigrants and border security. Instead of trial lawyer, personal injury lawyer. How about this one? Instead of vouchers, parental choice. And instead of health care choice, right to choose. Instead of saying deny, you say not give. So anyways, that was interesting, you know, what people respond to and just how you ask people. And it just, I think it begs the question sometimes. I saw one of the comedy shows, they were flipping the candidates and they were talking about Trump's plan against the Common Core issues. And what the dude guy said, he's like, Hillary's plan about Common Core issues and blah, blah, blah. And they basically laid out Trump's plan, but said Hillary. And this lady's jumping up and down. I absolutely agree. I'm with her. All right, then. That's all I have.
Comedy relief to me, I think.
Oh, my gosh. It's just funny. Let's talk about sugar. Sugar, spice, and everything nice. Terry, you told me earlier that there's new information out there about sugar, like it's bad for you or something. I should put the sugar block down?
We've known it's bad for you for a long time, and most of this information is old information, and that's the problem. It has been, and this is no nut job conspiracy theory thing, the sugar industry has kept significant pressure on FDA and other folks that have to do with our health. And it turns out that there's all kinds of information and studies out there showing the damage that sugar is capable of. And it's not just making you fat. It's raising your triglycerides in your blood, making you far more prone to heart attacks, and on and on and on. Sugar is a highly refined substance. One of the purest forms of caloric intake next to alcohol. Alcohol, by the way, is also sugar, but it is in all respects the purest form of what sugar is. So anyhow, alcohol, by the way, is not as bad for your heart as sugar is, interestingly. Don't take that as it's good for you. It's just not as bad for your heart. It rips your liver out and kicks you in the spleen and tails your pancreas to go away, but it is not as bad for your heart as sugar. We'll go into that a little bit more after a musical interlude by one of my favorite guys, a really nice person in the music industry. You want to introduce this one?
John Fogerty. Fortunate son.
John Fogerty. Yep.
It's a live one.
Fogarty, formerly of Creedence Clearwater Revival, now John Fogarty and family. He has his two sons playing with him. And just a couple of anecdotes about John. First of all, he is really one of the nicest people that you can imagine in show business. He really is. I've had personal contact with John a number of times, and he's been quite the individual. I don't think that I could name more than five other people in the entertainment industry who I have the kind of respect for that I do for John Fogarty. And for those of you who are not aware of what happened with Creedence Clearwater Revival, they were at the top of their game when they broke up. And the breakup happened due to his brother. His brother became absolutely insanely jealous of him. And the jealousy just oozed out. John is a pretty benign guy. And he really didn't know what was going on. He sensed that there was strife, and he sensed that there was friction, but he wasn't quite sure what this was all about. As he tells it, one day he was walking through the airport, and somebody ran up to him and asked for his autograph, and his brother was behind him. And his brother made some very cutting remarks, essentially saying, you know, how come he gets all the autographs? Yeah, sure, there's John Fogarty. What about us? It just about destroyed him, and it certainly came very close to destroying his career. He did very little for quite some while after that. It was a situation where John became very depressed and then found out that his record company essentially had him by the proverbials with a long-term contract that he was supposed to produce X amount of stuff for them. And he realized that he no longer had control over his own music, which sent him into further depression. For an entire decade, John's life was really a train wreck, and he was very, very depressed. And he eventually came out of it in a number of ways, but it was the hard way, and he almost lost everything that he had. He's had to rebuild almost his entire fortune. He has had to rebuild his musical career. And the guy went through some very tough times. And you hate to hear that when it's a guy who's given us a lot of wonderful music. He did most of the writing for Creedence, and has always, by the way, had a tremendous fascination with the Deep South. Even though he's from California, most people early on in the 60s thought he was from Bayou Country because of all the songs that he did. And, of course, his first big hit, Proud Mary, about a riverboat on the Mississippi, and so many other songs that were essentially songs of the South. So just a couple little bits and pieces about John Fogarty for everybody. Let's go back to the sugar plantations, Nick, shall we?
And, yeah, let's go.
What we have is sucrose. Comes from the sugar cane plant. It is highly refined, damn near pure, and what it does to our pancreas is a shock. It shocks our pancreas, and it sends us into a tailspin in so many ways. It's bad for us. It really is bad for us. We are addicted to it like crazy. Human beings become addicted to sugar for reasons that we've gone into in the show before, but I'll touch on them just momentarily. When we were hunter-gatherers living in the wilds, it was to our advantage to crave the things which would give us the most bang for our buck in terms of calories and energy. And, of course, anything that was sweet fell into that category. And nothing really sweeter than sugar cane, other than perhaps honey, certain honeys, down in the Caribbean and other places where they grow sugar cane. You'll see workers with very bad teeth because often what they do is they chew on the cane while they work. And, boy, it just rots the bejesus out of your teeth.
Their dentist does not like that.
Yeah, it feeds the bacteria that cause caries, otherwise known as cavities. And sugar also feeds cancers. As much as people don't want to hear that, why in the world I would walk into a hospital, someone who is undergoing cancer therapy, and sitting on their plate is Jell-O made with sugar and ice cream made with sugar. Wow. You know, who's thinking about this stuff? Why don't they ever pay attention to this? It is definitely contraindicated with cancer. You do whatever possible when an individual has cancer to switch away from what we call the very simple carbohydrates and go to the complex carbohydrates, whole wheat this and whole grain that, and so on and so forth. So anyhow, there it is. There you have it. And a little bit of propaganda against sugar this time. So, shall we? Off and at them.
You know, that on the other nutraceuticals is sort of on the other end of sugar, and you know, also a product of plants. But nutraceuticals are more that we've been looking at alternatives to very expensive pharmaceuticals. The nutraceuticals seem to be things that people are paying more attention to. But it's significantly more difficult, it seems, to get them these days. Terry, tell us more about that.
Well, nutraceuticals are products that are of natural origin, and they're not the incredibly highly refined stuff like sugar, although there is some refining that goes on with nutraceuticals. And nutraceuticals are sort of the other side of pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals are incredibly refined, highly, highly refined substances, often artificial substances that they look for a single active ingredient. When you refine things to that point, you are asking for trouble. If it's a natural substance, so often you have eliminated all of the other ancillary bits and pieces, other substances that are found naturally with it, and it becomes toxic, even if it wasn't toxic to begin with. There are many things that we eat that if you boiled away everything else, you could probably get a toxic ingredient or two out of them that would really be harmful to you. Rhubarb, which is something I really enjoy, has an acid in it that if you refine out everything but that acid, it's terrible for you. But if you eat it in the guise of regular old rhubarb and pie or sauce or what have you, most of it is carried back out through the body without any problem, and all is well with the world. Another example, of course, is poppies, the opium poppy, as opposed to refining it down to heroin. The opium poppy can be very helpful for pain relief and that sort of thing, or even elevating moods in small doses. But when it's refined down to heroin, bad news, baby. Horribly addictive. And in the long run, what happens is that people become more and more inured to it. And next thing you know, the lethal dosage comes along. It's a feather-thin line that takes them finally over the edge, and they OD, and that's the end of them. Because each time it takes a little more to get high. Nutraceuticals are available over in Europe and in many parts of the world, and are looked upon as perfectly legitimate treatments for all sorts of different things. Here in the U.S., they are virtually not allowed, and you can't make any claims for them. Over in Germany, there is a group called the E-Commission, and they are an oversight commission on plant-based nutraceuticals and so forth. Very, very well respected. They've studied many of the plants, many of the herbs for herbal medicine. They know what they do. They know what they don't do. They tell you various doses for them. They also tell you when there isn't enough information on them to make decisions so that the doctors know what to do. you'd be amazed at how much information is not in books about things like herbs. And it's just been carried over like the Native Americans did for hundreds and hundreds of years by oral tradition. There's so much stuff that they know. It's really very humbling to talk to some of the old-time practitioners, the old-time Native American practitioners. So if you go over to Poland, for instance, or you go over to Germany, you can buy nutraceuticals, and you're allowed to tell people what those nutraceuticals do. Here in the U.S., it's like they put tape over your mouth. If you're allowed to sell it at all, you can't make any claims for it. I'm sure most people have seen this disclaimer saying, you know, this product was not designed to treat or cure any illness, blah, 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 blah. It's like, really? Then why am I buying it?
Question, Terry. If any, limitations are there from finding these things online? If to the extent you know what they are, let's say you find them online on a German website, buy them, have them ordered to your home. Any problem there?
I don't want to say the wrong thing on that. I am not an expert in the legal portion of that. And the laws are so arcane and just bizarre. I know a lot of people do it. Lots of people do it. And people buy herbal remedies from all over the world and have them shipped in. How they're identified when they come through customs, I don't know. Are they legal? Are they not legal? Are they in a gray area? I do know that there are a number of drugs, a number of nutraceuticals that are in gray areas, where over in Europe and other places, they are prescribed by physicians. And over here, there's just no information on them at all, so they just sort of come in and there they are. Does this mean that they should be under prescription only? No, because in Europe, even though they are prescribed, it's not that they're not available without a prescription. They are, but doctors do prescribe many, many nutraceuticals over in Europe. I was in a Polish store not long ago, and it's fun looking through the products that they've got there. Some great stuff. Passion flower extract mixed with a couple of other herbs, calming you and giving you a bit of peace of mind. I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than most of what's out there from the U.S. as far as pharmaceuticals, and virtually no side effects. Passiflora, as it's called, the passion flower extract, very effective. It's known to be very effective.
There are a lot of people I know who Terry, like the oils, you talk about these different from the flowers. You can buy the oils at a lot of places, and they'll use them in diffusers or, you know, direct contact with the skin, like tea tree oil. You know, different oils have all sorts of different purposes, and it's rather complex. I know someone who's into that, and she gets all sorts of stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and this is probably going to get me in all kinds of trouble for saying this. I have always been a person, as we know, who tinkers and learns from tinkering. There have been instances where people have had really serious fungal infections that just wouldn't go away, and they were given all sorts of very toxic antifungal preparations. There are commercially made, available in skin stores or natural cosmetic stores, things made out of pink grapefruit oil. And these creams and preparations are amazingly effective on fungus and yeast as well. You can take this and you know, using the antifungals, even the over-the-counter ones that you get for athlete's foot and so on, they work barely in many instances and take weeks in many instances. I've mentioned this on the show before, but you take this pink grapefruit preparation, it's usually a cream, and use it 2 days in a row, and in most cases, even bad fungal infections are bye-bye. Do I suggest using it longer than that? If it were me, yes, I would use it longer than that, just to be sure. Iodine, which has really fallen into disfavor in medicine, because of its terrible caustic results. Yeah, right. Iodine does kill one or two cell layers, but iodine will take away the fungus, and we can lose two or three cell layers without any problem. People have chemical peels done on their faces all the time, and that's basically what iodine will do. And iodine has an interesting quality in that it will seep into the tissue. And in animals, we have used it on MRSA, which is the so-called flesh-eating bacteria, where you paint the area. You're not injecting it in or anything else. You paint the area with two or three layers of relatively strong iodine, tincture of iodine. And over the course of a week or so, much of that tissue is going to peel away, exposing fresh, clean tissue underneath. And it will penetrate deeply in many instances to get into the muscle and kill off the MRSA. MRSA can't stand up to the iodine. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot more... So much more out there than you know, general accepted Western medicine has to offer. And, you know, I've learned a lot just by listening to you talk on this show. You know, I mean, there's a lot out there. Let's move on to away from sugars and nutraceuticals and all that. Talk a little bit about law enforcement. Terry's going to introduce a new segment called Police Stories of the Week. He has lots of police stories. I have some, too. I have a lot of friends in law enforcement and see a lot of them frequently. So I see a lot of the good side. Other people see some of the more challenging side. But first, one of the things I'd like to mention is drones. And I'm going to make a comment that sounds kind of funny because, you know, we frequently on this show talk about we have too many laws. Why do we have so many laws? We have laws for all our laws, the books stacked up, you can almost get to the moon. And today I found out that there was nothing my local law enforcement could do about the gentleman who decides that it's his best plan to fly his drone in traffic in front of his house on a road that's, you know, one of these little country roads, but it's trees all around, and two-lane road, 35 miles an hour. Most people go through there around 50. And at any rate, people are flying up and down these roads in pickups and whatnot, and this guy stands on the edge of his driveway, and he's flying this drone. It goes all the way up, zooms down, right there, like 4 foot off the ground in front of cars, and this guy's been doing it several times. I told him the one time I drove by, I said, sir, you know, you need to put that thing up and take it inside. This is not the place to be doing that. There are FAA regulations against that, and next time I see it, I'm going to shoot the damn thing out of the sky. And right now it's dove season here in Texas, and a lot of people do have shotguns in their truck, so there you go. Anyways, the cops kind of laughed when I told them that the first time, and they went over and they couldn't find the man. Today, you know, same thing. I call him again. This guy's doing it again. It's about a month later. There's nothing they can do about it, the man says. There's no local ordinance. There's no state law. There's nothing prohibiting this man legally from flying his drones. I mean, you can go to an intersection and bounce these things off the hoods of cars, and ain't nothing anybody can do about it. Kind of struck me as very interesting. I'm like, at least disorderly conduct or something. But, you know, you fly drones, it's not regulated. We don't really know, you know. And it's, do we want more regulations? I don't know. I mean, I'm so against more and more regulations anyways. You know, but every now and then you catch yourself with a situation where you're like, you know, someone should be able to do something.
Well, you know, I don't think we need laws or regulations for a situation like that. If it's a dangerous action and it involves you, shoot the damn thing, you know. These are not toy airplanes. For people who wonder about this, these are not toy airplanes. Toy airplanes that are run by gas engines, and some of them are run by electrical engines, are a whole different world. Drones are, in fact, legitimate aircraft that can stay up in the air for a long period of time. They're used for spying. They're used for all sorts of things. And they are also quite large in comparison to most of the toy aircraft. In my personal view, that is an invasion of my privacy if somebody's flying drones over me. And I would like to think that I could deal with that invasion of privacy by disarming that drone with a couple of quick blasts from a shotgun. Of course, then you get arrested for, you know, discharging a weapon in city limits or something. But, damn, you know, how do we get away from this? How do we? You know, laws aren't the answer.
You know,
laws don't do a damn thing.
Don't we own? I'm sorry, y'all forgot about me. Don't we own
Never.
So much airspace above us? I think that legally we do own some amount of airspace on our own property.
Well, that would be an interesting thing. Nick, you just got your home.
Well, I think it's more of a I don't know about, I mean, I know about the water rights. There's air rights, limited amount.
Check it out.
I know that that's something, we had that on the bar exam. I do remember this. But more than that, there's privacy rights that I think are established by the FAA where craft can't fly lower than a certain distance. So that's, you know, if these drones are
it's
at
also
a distance,
safety rights.
Aircraft.
Well,
right,
that.
I know. So, you know, one thing I want to propose about this is, you know, take a video. I took a video of the guy. You know, here's, I always try, you know, we have our phones with us now. And, you know, people have gone to the media and, you know, we give the media a hard time on a national level, but on a local level, there's a lot of crap that goes on. And whether the city doesn't respond, municipal services are lacking, and people will go up, you know, in North Texas, Fox 4 takes it, you know, and they'll have things about, you know, complaints about neighbors, you know, the city's fence is overgrown or this or that, or, you know, some problem, or they had one about one of these spray fountains and the zillions and zillions of gallons of water that this thing was using and just dumping it into a pond, like a detention pond right there. You know, and people are saying, well, you know, no wonder our bills are so high. You know, we're like, we just got water, yeah. Like, phew, it's wasted, you know. And, but anyway, it's like local media.
Pond.
They can, well, it's yeah. A detention pond where I live. You can call it a retention
yeah.
pond
oh,
there, but
boy.
We call everything
okay.
different. But, anyways, right. I don't know what to do about the drones, you know, the guy, and that's the thing, you know, if I were to go and, you know, just pull over and, you know, shoot the thing, you know, I'm liable to get sued by him civilly for, you know, who knows what. And, you know, I think the guy is, I don't think he's all there. I think he's not. You know, I don't. What's our correct word for that now? I don't think the guy's all there in the first place.
Looney
so that'd
Tunes.
Probably be another enhancer. I'd probably be
Looney
locked
Tunes
up for years. You know. Anyways, Jerry, right,
well,
what about your police
about
stories?
Something else. Well, it's going to be a very quick one because
a quick one because we got to get on to pliers. If we don't talk about
right.
pliers and saddles,
very quickly,
saddle pads
folks,
for horses,
you can look this one
move.
Up. Yeah, folks, you can look this one up on the internet. Very, very quickly. A family member, an uncle or something, was acting up at a party or family get-together and became very boisterous, and somebody decided they were going to call the police. And by the time the police got there, he was sitting quietly at a table, and he said, just leave me alone. I had a bad episode. I just want to be left alone. And he apparently had, like, a small pocket knife laying out on the table. Didn't even have it in his hand. And they shot him and killed him. Shot him and killed him right then and there. You know, what the hell is going on? And hell no, we don't need any more of this bullshit from Nazis. And I'm calling them that. That is exactly what's going on. Man, the stormtroopers did that kind of stuff. What country is this? Hell no, we don't need any more militarization of a violence-crazed police force. Are they all like that? No, I've said it many times. But more and more and more every day are like that. And every day we hear of this stuff, another person shot and killed, another person shot and killed, another person shot and killed. Hell, I'm afraid that if I ever got stopped for a traffic stop these days that, you know, unless I was able to somehow press a button without them seeing it and a little sign comes up says I'm unarmed, I will not resist, please be gentle, don't shoot me, don't kill me. I mean, it's crazy. This is craziness. On to our tool of the week, which is pliers. Very versatile tool. Should be in everybody's toolbox. There are many, many types, and I'm going to try and start on them. We're finishing this up next show. You have needle-nose pliers, usually with a cutter for wire. Needle-nose pliers are for getting in there and grabbing small things, twisting small things. They generally have a certain amount of serration toward the tip to hold on to things. As I said, they have a wire cutter in them. Slip joint pliers, those are your basic toolbox pliers, and they have a slip joint so that you can make them larger or smaller. An incredibly handy tool for gripping, holding on to, bending, lots and lots and lots of things that pliers can do. And you have a lineman's pliers. It's a very heavy-bodied pliers made for electrical work and heavy wire cutting. Lineman's pliers come in two types. One of them is the New England pattern, which is the one I tend to favor. And the other lineman's pliers is a much blockier plier. The New England pattern is much smoother. I like it a lot more, and it's not quite as heavy to carry with you. And the New England lineman's plier is also the one that most people who work with rebar, they use a version of that plier for doing the twisting of the wire on rebar when they're setting up rebar for concrete molding and so on, concrete pouring. Another form of plier is what we call the pump plier. And that is another one with adjustable jaws. And the jaws tend to stick out on an angle from the front of the plier. There are some very good quality ones out there. By the way, Nipex is a company that makes some interesting pliers called crocodile pliers. They are similar to what we call pump pliers. They adjust a little bit differently and a little bit more securely than the American type pump pliers. Another plier that you will find use for is a duckbill plier. It has a relatively narrow nose on it, and it's wide flat. Lots of uses for duckbill pliers. Most people don't have them in their toolbox. Most people wish they had them in their toolbox at least 6 or 7 times a year. Duckbill pliers are very handy. There are compound leverage pliers. These things are amazing pliers. They're very hard to get nowadays. They used to be made by Utica Tool Company. The only ones I've seen in recent years are the ones made overseas. There's a British version that's actually a very quality tool, very nice tool. Compound leverage pliers is something you're going to have to look up. They have a cutter on them usually, and the cutter is on the top of the plier, and it will cut through an 8-penny nail like it was Swiss cheese. It's a very powerful set of pliers. Because of the compound leverage and the parallel jaws, it will hold things that other pliers will not hold. And that's about all we got time for in the pliers department, I think.
I had no idea. What was that one called? A slip joint pliers?
Well, slip joint pliers is just your plain old
average
tool.
I had no idea there was a name for that.
Absolutely. That's
wow.
A slip joint plier. Yeah.
See how much we learn, kids?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hell no, the radio
and
show.
Most...
We'll be back next weekend. Or next week.
Thanks, everybody.
We're out of time.
Bye-bye.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.